We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a notice spotted in a German hotel and quoted in the Times, read by Peter Donaldson.
The minibar in your room will be checked. We ask you to inform the clerk about the consummation you had the other night.
Thanks to Barbara Pipes of Derby for that. Let's meet our teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Francis Ween. And on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, a nice easy one. Why was breaking up no longer so hard to do in this not-so-United Kingdom?
This is the vote on devolution in Wales and Scotland. They're voting...
Cowdenbeath 2, Stourhouse 3.
Can you remember what the result of the vote was on Thursday night?
It was so long ago now.
It was a victory for Hamilton Academicals.
Tony Blair said he was very nervous about this, and he said that our supporters must go out to vote, and he was worried about this thing called the contentment factor, where people might just be so happy with the government that they just are too happy to vote in case they have an accident in the polling station or something.
That's where John Major went wrong, wasn't it? He got everybody so happy that nobody voted for him.
Yeah.
Members of the new Scottish Parliament will actually vote electronically, whilst Welsh Assembly members will be counted through a gate, rounded up and penned successfully. Two points to Andy. Francis, who's one voucher short of a humane asylum law?
It's Jack Straw.
It is.
They're letting in the odd refugee from Kosovo. Not too many. Not to ever do it. But anyway, it's some part of our humanitarian policy. We invite some refugees over here, and then we pass a new thing called the Immigration and Asylum Bill, which means they're not allowed to have any money. That's not quite true. Adults will have £1, and children can have 50p pocket money. And the rest of the time they live on vouchers, sort of things you get at the supermarket checkout, so they'll just be given a job lot of things that get 10p off a packet of soap powder, and they live on that.
20p off caviar, that sort of thing.
Yes, and they're going to be dumped in open prisons, I think. Ford Open Prison, the Ernest Saunders wing.
Now, what I heard was actually...
And they have, if they get Alzheimer's, they'll be released and become multimillionaires.
Now, I heard that it's all right, they're going to be housed via this ITV programme called Give a Refugee a Home, with Matthew Kelly and Carol Vorderman.
And then all these changing rooms type people come along and spruce up their derelict blocks of flats that they're living in. And then Ground Force arrives.
Charlie Dimmock.
Except Tony Blair has ruled out the use of Ground Force, so they're not going to do it.
These vouchers, you can't get change because they're just a voucher. So they've realised that they're going to have like a £20 voucher and a £10 voucher and then a £5 voucher and a £1 voucher, which could possibly be made of metal. And they're going to have to stop them from being forged, obviously. So there'll be some kind of watermark. And then to identify that it's a British voucher and can only be used in Britain, they might have to do something like put the Queen's head.
So what's it going to do at the supermarkets? Are we going to have six refugees or less queues? And...
When Michael Howard first introduced the bill, it was strongly opposed by Jack Straw, who claimed it would have stopped both Mr. Howard's and Michael Portillo's parents coming to Britain, which is why he's supporting it now. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, who are quite frankly not prepared to work any more hours.
Is this the doctors?
It is.
Typical of the government to pick on people who are too tired to fight back, isn't it? They've nobbled Europe on the Working Times Directive because they think, you know, that there's got to be exemptions for jobs where you don't have to be awake, like truck drivers and surgeons and things. And the doctors are oblivious to all this because they're just going, scalpel, forceps, cheese sandwich shopping.
Shadow Health Minister Anne Widdecombe was quick to criticise the government. She wants to see an increase in hospital beds so that more pregnant prisoners can be chained to them. Alan, your piece of music.
Been in Westminster, Southminster, Kidderminster, Akron, the Eastbourne, Southbourne, Sittingbourne, Paddington, Bolton, Paynton, Stockton, Inverness, Renwick, Brunswick, Chiswick, Dungeness, Mansfield, Sheffield, Enfield, Newcross, Kingscross, Charing Cross, Banbury Cross, Dedlocks. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Alan, why is David Blunkett mapping out changes in the national curriculum?
Oh, this is the it's a continuing story of robbing the children of any heritage. I mean, they told them that Winston Churchill didn't exist, and Nelson had two good eyes and two good legs and never kissed Hardy. they decided there was no such thing as geography, and all maps would disappear. It's getting very Orwellian. And David Blunkett, in his wisdom, or rather, in his spin doctor's wisdom, on Tuesday said, no, this is we're changing all the maps again, and we're putting the signposts in the right places and all the names back on the maps, and children will now have to learn geography.
The head of their curriculum authority, Dr. Nick Tate, he said you can teach geography without using maps. So when children say, well, where's Bolivia, miss? You say, right, well, you go past the headmaster's office.
That's how I was actually taught the solar system. I remember Miss Brooks held up an orange, an apple, and a grape. And I and David Collingwood were encouraged to walk round holding this. And for the next 50 years, I thought the moon was edible.
I thought the Big Bang Theory was something to do with Carmen Miranda.
David Blunkett's promised to reinstate traditional geography lessons with more emphasis on naming cities, rivers and mountains. One survey showed that fewer than half of British pupils could locate London on a blank map, though it turned out they were all children of minicab drivers. Rather than carry on learning in the classroom, many children would sooner spend time fumbling around behind the bike shed. Although this also may be considered educative in the Chris Woodhead sense of the word. And the scores at the end of round one are Andy and Francis 4, Alan and Jeremy 4 points. We start round two with an item seen in the Times Educational Supplement.
One member of the audience was troubled by something. Was boarding school the best place for 12 to 18-year-olds to develop their sexual identity? It's quite possible, but in a co-educational school, was the reply from the deputy head of a mixed boarding school. And animals are helpful too, he said.
Thanks to Robin Parker of Stevenage. Andy, why are prices going from sky high to rock bottom?
This is war between the digital TV companies. And Rupert Murdoch is offering a decoder box thingy for nothing. And it's not just a decoder. You can make phone calls on it. It'll do the hoovering. It'll send out your Christmas cards. It'll do everything. And Rupert will come round and fit it personally. It sounds like a great offer to me. I'll be...
You can't pick up any television programmes until you've taken out a subscription. Once you've got
there's a catch.
Your free box. So you get your lovely free gift, and then you have to hand over all your money to Rupert Murdoch to pay your subscription. And then you can watch old episodes of Dad's Army.
It was B-Sky B's decision to give away free the decoder boxes for its digital TV system, which it had previously been charging £200 for. The benefit of the move would be to receive free a digital box giving you access to 200 channels. The drawback would be having to watch any of them. 2 points to Andy. Francis, which upstanding Knightsbridge citizen failed to become one?
Oh, I think it's Muhammad. Fired.
Yep.
He has been applying for about 1 million years to get a passport. And he always gets turned down, and he applied again. And the new government has now turned him down. His only hope now, I think, is to go out to Macedonia, pretend to be a refugee from Kosovo. Try to get in that way. And then he can have a free voucher to the Harrods Food Hall.
I feel sorry for him in a way, because he obviously craves Britishness and wants to be a UK citizen, but it seems to me that he just doesn't understand. You know, he takes over these institutions, has no respect for the traditions, like he took over Fulham and made them successful.
He took over Punch magazine, Alan's old rag. Didn't make that very successful.
No. I'm very glum about him generally. I mean, I wish I'd give him a passport, then he might leave the country.
Exactly right, yes. Mr. Al Fayed, spokesman, former...
You don't have to call him Al Fayed.
Oh, Al... no, we've dropped the Al, haven't we?
The Al is fake.
Is his name Al? Just... He's Al. You can call me Al.
Is that why that musical's just called Jolson, then?
Mr. Fyde's spokesman, the former BBC journalist Laurie Mayer, described the judgment as perverse. Mayer took over the job from another BBC man, Michael Cole. Why BBC employees would want to work for an eccentric autocrat who throws money at worthless projects is anyone's guess. He was born into a poor family in Egypt and began his business career selling sewing machines, a skill he put to good use years later when stitching up government ministers. Jeremy, listen to this.
Got this in pocket, gunpowder, I am gonna use it. Intention, I'm feeling mental, gonna make you notice.
Jeremy, who cashed in on a golden opportunity and made sacks of cash?
Ah, this is Goldman Sachs. A man from Goldman Sachs, Gavin Davis, I think, suddenly has £125 million for nothing. This is the something for nothing society that Blair wants to put a stop to in a day. £100 million, I mean, you know, the government could spend that, and I mean, bombing Yugoslavia for a day. You know, that's the kind of money we're talking. And he got this money just for shares, and so he will now probably be so rich that he gets asked to join the government and become called Lord Stroke of Luck. he's one of these people that comes on the television as an independent and unbiased expert on the free market and comes on and says, well, I think capitalism's bloody brilliant. I don't know what everyone's moaning about. I think it's really great.
Yes, it was the listing of investment bankers Goldman Sachs on the stock market. While this has been an unqualified success, the British business world has seen a number of disastrous flotations, including Leyland in 84, Polly Peck in 89, and Robert Maxwell in 91. Two points to Jeremy. Alan, whose portrait painting had to be handled with kid gloves?
This is a very big portrait of the Queen, very, very big, very large hands, very large wrists, rather like Michelangelo's David. There's all sorts of complaints about it. Perfectly all right for the Chelsea pensioners. Shows a couple of very tiny Chelsea pensioners and an immense queen. She looks, it's like Mighty Joe Young. You expect her to be young, you know, standing on top of the Empire State Building.
I read that the artist's wife said that he'd got the wrists wrong, that the queen didn't have thick wrists. But she must have thick wrists because her core activity is just shaking hands with millions of strangers.
I think it's time to pay tribute to Oliver Reed, whose hobby, apart from drinking, was arm wrestling. The only person ever to beat him was the Queen. Do you know that? El Nino Bar in Marbella. 1963. Went straight down, man.
Yes, it was the latest portrait of the Queen, which shows her standing next to a Van Dyck portrait of Charles I. The Royal Society of Portrait Painters, which has the painting on display for members, says that members of the public can write in to request day passes to see it. Imagine being able to see the likeness of a queen for just the cost of a stamp. So the scores at the end of round two are, I'm afraid, everybody, tediously enough, with 8 points. Round three begins with a cutting from the Leatherhead Advertiser.
An irate bus driver has hit back at claims that the closure of Leatherhead bus garage would not affect staff. He said, we've been offered jobs in other depots, but none of us want to go there. The reason most of us work here is because we live nearby. We're going to have to pay to travel further to work, and public transport is so unreliable.
Thanks to Patrick Hyam of Leatherhead for that. Andy, which birds have found paradise this week?
Oh, now I know this. This is a story about they've discovered that this bird called the buffalo weaver, which I found puzzling. I mean, I don't know how you weave a buffalo. You'd need a hell of a lot of wool, wouldn't you, if you do a whole buffalo. But he's a buffalo weaver bird, and they've decided that he experiences orgasm, if I can use that word, and I just have. His legs go all quivery just after he's done the deed. It'd probably be it's probably some evolutionary thing. They'll probably discover that if a bird has an orgasm, it makes it more successful. Or it'll just lie around with a stupid grin on its face and be eaten up by predators, in which case it'll die out.
Don't all birds have orgasms?
Did the sky move for you?
Well, if his legs go quivery, isn't he going to fall off the branch?
Scientists observing the male buffalo weaver bird Noting that following sex, the tiny creature began to quiver and shake with its leg muscles going into spasm, a phenomenon previously seen only in England footballers taking a penalty. Francis, your piece of music.
I like driving in my car. It don't look much for driving far.
Oh, sorry.
I like driving in my car. Even with a flat tire.
Shut up, I'm indicating.
I like driving in my car by docu-soap star Maureen Rees, whose driving ambitions, Francis, will face a sterner test.
It's the learner test. There are too many people driving. I think it's probably Jack Straw again. Most things are Jack Straw. He's cracking down. He's bringing in a very tough new immigration and asylum and driving test bill, which means that if you want to have a driving licence, you first have to go and live in a hostel for a year on vouchers and practice on the local dodgems. And then you have to sit, I think, take a three-year degree course or something and sit a written test.
It's actually Prescott's lot. It's the Driving Standards Agency.
Jack Straw put him up.
Which reports to the Ministry of Transport, which is run by the fat frog with two jaguars. As they call him in the Sioux Nation. See, fat frog with two jaguars.
I failed my driving test twice, and part of the problem was I could never do an emergency stop unless someone tapped on the windscreen. The other thing, I think, if they're going to improve the test, I think the other thing they so they could improve the social skills of the examiners, because they've all got that wonderfully enigmatic silence when you do something dreadfully wrong and there's a policeman lying dying under the wheels of your car, and they don't say anything, do they? They just look down, they write something there down, they go, just drive on.
They said we're changing the test because of the change in the driving culture, and the main thing that's changed in the driving culture in the 40 years I've been driving is that people eat in their cars. Now, I think you should have tests on those things where you have to remove a half-eaten chocolate bar from between your legs at 80 miles an hour. And that one where you buy a packet of prawn sandwiches when you fill up and then can't get the strip, so you drive with your elbows while you try and open it with your teeth. Those are the things you need. And how to cope with a juggernaut that passes you on the inside with the driver's bare buttocks pressed against the window. Those things we ought to be tested on.
Why don't they just stop giving out licences? The same with this phone thing. Instead of changing our codes all the time, I say, if you haven't got a phone already, tough. You have to wait for someone. You have to wait for someone else to die. If you want a driving licence, you have to hang around, you know, on the hard shoulder, looking for accidents. And first one to the wreck gets the licence. Hard but fair.
Spokesman for John Prescott said the test would revolutionise motoring. Or, as the Deputy Prime Minister put it, testy revolvi up the motor hood deep joy. Two points to Francis, I think. Jeremy, whose career seemingly did peak after all in 1924.
Oh, this is, what's his face? Mallory, that they found him. They found him up Everest, and they're hoping that they can prove that he did make it there after all, because that would be a happy ending.
There was a lot of stuff about how good British tweed suits were in 1924. It was nice to read in the paper. They showed how people go up Everest now, carrying most of Houston's space station on their back, and they used to go up just in these boots, so it could be anyone. Oh, there must be hundreds of tweed suits on Everest. How do you know which one's Mallory?
Yeah, could be Andrew Cruikshank, couldn't it?
Janet, these slopes are covered in snow.
A number of items found with Mallory suggest that he was indeed the first to reach Everest Peak, most noticeably a broken pickaxe and an item of clothing bearing the insignia, "My dad reached the summit of Everest and all I got was this lousy T-shirt." His gripping 1923 description of a giant hairy beast, enormous in girth, standing almost 7 feet tall, is thought by most mountaineers to be the first reported sighting of Brian Blessed. Alan, why do London Underground just want to be loved by you?
Yes, they have synthesised, London Transport, they've synthesised the voice of Marilyn Monroe, who will say, "Mind the gap." So no unconscious irony there, then. I don't know why they've chosen her, but they just have.
The problem with that announcement is, I mean, it's mostly tourists on the underground, and they never tell them where the gap is. So they tend to step off and you see them looking up like, you know... like the Muppets in that hospital operation sketch where the voiceover starts, you know.
Scores at the end of round three are still a nerve-shredding 12 points each. And before we start the final round, here's a clipping from the Times.
The prince recalled drinking a concoction of whiskey and liqueur when he was last on the island. I discovered what a rusty nail is, he said, and I'm not sure that it did anything for my brain. However, I'm hoping for another one later.
Thanks to Diana Millage of Coleshill for that. Andy, listen to this.
Now it is no wonder that he won the prize, and everyone's staring with wide open eyes. They've never seemed to have such a size as his lovely watermelon. He's got the biggest and the best in Africa. Do you know they really are a lovely sight?
Andy, why have melon sales gone from boom to bust?
This is the big political story of the week. Actually, you sometimes get people write in, they got a letter saying, you know, how do you tell if a story is total cobblers? And I think the answer is, if it includes the word psychologist. Because apparently, I think he's... actually, is he a fruit psychologist?
A retail psychologist
said that when women shoppers feel the melons and look at the melons, they favour the small melons because they subconsciously, that's another word that tells you that it's cobblers, are comparing the melons with their breasts. Thus, no, it's just what it said. Thus reinforcing that very wise old adage, never eat anything bigger than your breasts.
Did he say anything about buying bananas?
It's all to do with Kate Moss. Apparently the fashion this year is for smaller breasts, and therefore people want smaller melons. So next year will be a different fashion. How you can change your breasts according to the whims of fashion, suddenly shrink them one year and raise them next year, I don't know, but it's what happens, apparently.
What, like the gasometer at the Oval or something?
7 out of 10 women questioned admitted they'd been thinking about breasts when purchasing their melons, compared to the 9 out of 10 men who'd admitted that they'd been thinking about them non-stop since they were 12 and a half. Francis, who forked out £1.8 million for the cup that dare not speak its name?
Oh, the British Museum?
Ooh.
It's an old Roman silver cup, I think, and it has scenes which can't be described on a family programme before the watershed, because the ancient Romans used to get up to that sort of thing. As many people do, Abraham Lincoln, do you see, he was outed this week. Matthew Paris made his weekly appearance on Newsnight, and running short of candidates. Abraham Lincoln's gay. And this is it's a scene of torrid gay sex.
It's an old Roman goblet, it said in the paper. I didn't read any further, I thought I've had enough of it.
The British Museum spent £1.8 million acquiring a Roman cup decorated with images of an older man doing to a younger one what NATO's been doing for the well-defined military objective. Jeremy, which air hostess was more than prepared for takeoff?
Oh, this is a woman on British Airways who made a pretty safe bet. She said, I bet we don't land on time. And she said, I'll dance naked on the runway if we land on time, which is, you know, you'd say, wouldn't you? So I'll take me spleen out with a corkscrew if we land on time. You could say that quite safely. I'll eat me own bottom if we land on... And unfortunately, she actually found herself in the position of dancing naked on the tarmac. And all the male cabin crew lined up and said, what's she like?
Naked. Just grateful that she wasn't running around naked because her luggage hadn't turned up. That's what I said.
Tarmac was probably pleased. Genoa. Normally they just get to be snogged by the Pope, don't they?
2 points to Jeremy. Alan, which dog had its day after 19 hours underground?
It's a dog called Ben. Went up a drain. Who was it? Concept. The man went out for a walk with his dog and the dog suddenly disappeared. And the man could hear it barking down the drain. So he ran along and he could hear this dog getting fainter and fainter. until it arrived, or rather his ear arrived, at a housing estate. And because it was a dog, they dug up the housing estate and the road, and the fire brigade got in. Seven Apache helicopters came in. Clinton gave an interview at the Consett airport. And it wasn't grateful. I watched it on television. His bloody dog would lick some. It just came out. As if it happened all the time. Just looked at the ruins of Consett. Very little left of Consett after the dog had finished going up the pipe.
True in every detail. While Ben was down the drain, he discovered the careers of Simon Dee and Jerry Halliwell. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this is an excerpt from the Good Pub Guide. It concerns a pub called Checkers at Wheeler End. It says, village signposted off B482 in Lane End, then first left also signposted Wheeler End, or can be reached by very narrow Bullocks Farm Lane, brackets, sign may be defaced.
Francis.
Simon, this is from my local newspaper, the East Anglian Daily Times. Dog owners in Chelmsford face fines of up to £1,000 if they let their animals soil the street. The new laws mean it is an offence for a dog to foul any road with a speed limit of 40 miles an hour or lower. Blind people will be exempt from the laws.
Alan.
Well, I've got one that's been sent in from Townsend Seymour, from Liss, and it's from the Petersfield Post. His Alton magistrates slapped a £25 fine on a revenge-seeking lover who smacked her rival in the face. Kelly Snow, aged 22, from Petersfield, assaulted a woman she claimed had slept with her boyfriend during a chance meeting in Petersfield High Street.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. A mildly anticlimactic draw at 16 points each. And before we leave you, here's an item spotted in The Guardian.
Callers to the cable television supplier Cable and Wireless are disappointed by a recorded message of a scheduling change. Due to events in Kosovo and Albania, it informs them, the film Wag the Dog will not be shown. How sensitive of Sky to pull a movie about an American president starting a war in Albania to deflect attention from a domestic sex scandal? The message concludes, the film Mortal Kombat Annihilation will now be shown in...
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Francis Wheen and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.